The Buffalo News Ice Time podcast is brought to you by Express Windows. Windows starting at $359 installed. Visit expresswindowsinc.com.
Welcome to Ice Time, the Buffalo News' hockey podcast. I'm Lance Lysowski, the Sabres beat writer for the Buffalo News, joined as always by our columnist Mike Harrington, and we only have a few more of these to record before the season ends. That is extremely hard to believe, Mike, but the tone of the conversation and what we're talking about, it has shifted quite a bit the last couple of weeks. Remember, it wasn't long ago the Sabres lost six in a row. It looked like they were just going to be playing out the string. Well, all of a sudden, they're 8-4 of their last 12. And if you look at some of the numbers, 48 goals during that span, their power play is 9-34. In the last four games, Mike, 24 goals. That's six goals a game. During that 12-game stretch, wins over Edmonton, Vegas, Winnipeg, two over Ottawa, and, of course, the one over the Capitals. And this always raises the question. I mean, people are comparing it to the last couple of years where the Sabres start to play well once they're out of the race because the pressure's not on. So that leads to the big question. Do these wins, does this progress or this better run of play mean anything?
Well, I'm actually writing a column about that for the Buffalo News' Thursday editions, and I'm actually in the middle of that column because I'm still actually formulating my thoughts on that topic. My initial reaction is always that every game is meaningful. It's certainly meaningful for a lot of the teams they've been playing. Every game is meaningful for the Sabres, for individuals, for personal milestones, Tage Thompson trying to get to 40 goals. But does it carry over to the next season? I don't think it necessarily carries over to the next season because so much changes. We're going to see different players, probably some different assistant coaches. You just never know who's injured. You know, you had the Jack Quinn injury in June at the draft when he tore his Achilles. So you never totally know. But to me, there's always some significance here. And I think part of the connection to this season is this is closer to what the Sabres are. This is what they were supposed to be. And really, this is what they were. Let's not forget that they were in third place in the Atlantic Division at Thanksgiving. So you've really had three seasons. You've had the start of the year, the first 21 games. You've had the 13-game winless streak. And now you've had the roughly 40 games since the winless streak ended. You can't get rid of 13 games. They existed. They happened. If you took out those 13 games, this team is in the number two wild card based on points percentage. So it's just going to be a huge what if to this season. But yes, to me, ultimately, every game matters. It doesn't predict future success. But do people just want them to just go down the tubes and lose every game? Don't answer that question. It's rhetorical. I know some of you probably do. Enough of that. But do you want to be the Sabres right now playing like they are, or do you want to be the Boston Bruins? I think I'd rather be the Buffalo Sabres right now.
Yeah, and it leads to the question. I mean, how would people react if they were losing, if they were just playing out the string and they weren't playing like this? If they, you know, instead of 8-4, they were, you know, 2-10, you know,
Well, Kevin Adams would probably have to go if they were 2-10. One negative to it is people are going to say, well, they're going to keep Kevin Adams. They're going to keep Kevin Adams anyway, people. I'm sorry.
And we had that conversation leading up to the trade deadline where, you know, the last weeks of the season, they had to show progress. You had to see guys like Jack Quinn playing well. Well, they're playing well. And it just leads to the bigger question, I think. And Tage Thompson mentioned this post-game in Ottawa. You know, when the pressure isn't on and you're out of the playoffs, you can play with a sort of fearlessness that allows you to close out games like they did in Washington and Ottawa, where you're not worried about making mistakes. But I think the big predicament or the big question facing the main group of players are going to be returning next season is how do you translate what they've been doing over the last couple weeks into next season when there is going to be pressure on, when you are expected to compete for a playoff spot, and there's going to be a summer where there's going to be trades, and I'm sure they're going to bring more leadership in, some more veteran players. I think that's really benefited Ottawa in particular with some of the guys that they brought in. But yeah, I mean, it's it, it's performing when the spotlight is on you, and there is, you know, and there are stakes, because it has been a couple of years here where when they have fallen out, they sort of fight their way back in. They make things interesting. Well, they have to play a more consistent brand of hockey. And I thought it was interesting, particularly post game in Ottawa, just some of Lindy Ruff's comments, to where he wasn't overly pleased with that game. You could tell some of the turnovers, and that is the big focus for this team moving forward. He feels a lot better. You know, obviously their 5-on-5 scoring is, you know, well, I think they were tied for third or fourth in the league at the end of last night. Their power play is the top half of the league over the last month or so, but it is really going to be cutting down on those turnovers that have killed them time and time again. And there's going to be some personnel moves. They're going to have to fix the decor. We're going to see about goaltending. But I think, to me, when it comes to this team, it's all about finally learning how to play a mature game where you're not forcing those cross-ice passes that Dylan Cousins did and Peyton Krebs intercepted. Like, that is a textbook Buffalo Sabres kind of play that has crippled this team the last couple of years, where, yeah, you make a high-risk play instead of making the simple one, and that almost bit them in Washington and almost bit them in Ottawa. And it's just a lesson that they're going to have to figure that out moving forward. You know, and we've seen Lindy Ruff try to address it in a lot of different ways.
What in the world did Travis Green say to Dylan Cousins behind closed doors after that play? Holy cow. And the other thing now going forward, as the team continues to mature, as guys continue to get older, when you're in a rut, when you're facing adversity, when you're struggling early next season, there will be the first 2 or 3 game losing streak. And you know what everybody's going to say to them? How do you make sure this doesn't turn into a 13-game losing streak? You need to just dial down disasters early in seasons. They had the 8-game skid under Don Granato 2 years ago in November that they chased that whole season. 13 games this year. They don't dial down their adversity. They continue to double down sometimes, it appears, to use the blackjack term. They need to stop the streaks. They don't need to necessarily win 6 or 8 in a row all the time. They need to be more consistent. But when bad things happen, they have to stop multiplying. And that's something they have not been able to do because they feel pressure and they are immature. And a guy like Cousins was at the top of the list. Maybe having him out of that dressing room will help. But, yeah, more adults in the room in the offseason to help in those situations would really be highly desirable.
You know, for the first, I would say, coming out of the 22-23 season, Kevin Adams, I'm sure that he would admit this, was guilty of slow playing the building of this roster around the core. Not enough was done that summer. It really wasn't until last summer, Mike, where we saw really transformative kind of moves. You know, Savoy for McLeod has worked out as well as anybody could have imagined. They paid Jason Zucker. There was a much you know, more concerted effort to really change over this roster and address some of the deficiencies. You can even go back to Byram for Mittelstadt. But there needs to be even more of an emphasis on doing this summer, and this is our second topic here, is that...
Don't wait months for new windows on your home. Express Windows can have them installed in just weeks with high-quality double-hung windows starting at only $359. Call Express Windows for a free at-home estimate or stop by our showroom on Delaware Avenue in Tonawanda.
Tage Thompson, 39 goals. Alex Tuch is, what, 32, 33? Well, Tage Thompson's turned 28. Alex Tuch's turned 29. All of a sudden, two of the big pieces that you're building your forward group around are getting up there, right? I mean, they're in the middle of their prime still, but you can't.
They're getting up there at 28 and 29.
But that's the NHL, right? I mean, a player who reaches their prime at 27 years old, typically. And so you can't take that for granted. You can't just assume Tage Thompson's going to be scoring 40 goals every year. You can't just assume that Alex Tuch is going to have, he's been exceptional this season, in my opinion, and have a Selke level kind of year like he has. Mm-hmm. You need to do this is a huge summer for this organization. Right. Like, and there's so many different aspects to this on what we can target on what they need to build. But, you know, you look down in Rochester, Mike, there's no immediate reinforcements coming. You know, we've seen Isak Rosén. We've seen a couple of games here and there, but nothing there shows me that he's ready. Noah Oslund's been, he's having an exceptional rookie season with the Amerks, but he's not going to be ready to help you. So this is a big summer to target. And I think these last couple of weeks here really does help, you know, all the decision makers involved, and that includes Lindy Ruff, on what you're going to need, right? Jack Quinn coming through and having a strong finish has to be encouraging. You can, this is somebody that you're going to be able to count on in your middle six potentially. And they're going to have, like, there's going to be cap space. There's going to have to be some contract extensions handed out, but it's a big one for them to make sure that they're putting the right pieces around guy. Like, Dahlin's still 24, but when it comes to your forwards, I mean, Thompson and Tuck are your guys, and you have to make a pretty significant effort, in my opinion, to make sure that this doesn't happen again.
Right. And I don't want to hear this discussion of, oh, they need another top six forward. I just don't, because we know where they are offensively. We know where they are in the stats. You can read them. They do have to figure out centers. Is Thompson going to be a center? Is Norris going to be your number one center? Is it going to be healthy enough? What about Kalik? That's, to me, the only question among the forwards. This summer is all about what do you do on defense, and I think they're going to certainly have two or three new defensemen in here next year, and what you do with your goaltending. Because now, all of a sudden, let's be honest, Ukko-Pekka-Luukkonen is no longer the number one goaltender here. The number one goaltender is James Reimer. That was not in the plans. But you can barely put Luukkonen on the ice right now. His save percentage in his last five outings is .817. You can barely put him out there.
His confidence is shot.
Yeah, the confidence is completely gone. The confidence I think the team has in him is shot. Because look at how this team plays in front of Reimer. But Reimer certainly has bailed them out. He bailed them out in Winnipeg. He was very good in Ottawa. So they have to figure out the goaltending situation. But, you know, it's half a loaf both ways. People say, well, the defense has to be better. Well, sometimes the goalie's there to bail people out. And Luukkonen just doesn't bail anybody out anymore. But they have to figure that out. I don't want to hear about offense. I just don't want to hear about it. No team in the league has a fan base talking about their offense when they have these kind of stats. It's just this whole obsession with top six forward drives me nuts. I didn't think they needed it when the season started. And it's been proven out. Zucker and McLeod have more than made up for Skinner's buyout. You know, and Skinner was just not that valuable a player. Skinner was addition by subtraction. They have to figure out what they have defensively after Dahlin, Byram, and Power. Are Byram and Power both going to be here? If you assume those three are here, who are the other three on defense? Maybe Bernard Docker. You know, another reason why these games matter. What can Bernard Docker show? So far, he's been pretty good. He looks like he could be a third pair guy. Can you get a veteran right-handed guy to be a regular, play with Owen Power? And then what do you do about goaltending? Those are the two biggest questions I have.
Yeah, in my opinion, Josh Norris was their big add up front. He's a left-handed center that I believe their plan is to play him with Tage Thompson once Norris is healthy.
Lindy Ruff has mentioned it.
Lindy Ruff has mentioned it. He wants a left-handed center with Tage. He feels that is the best setup. That's why Yuri Kulik is there right now. So down the middle, as of right now, Mike, you have Josh Norris, Ryan McLeod, Yuri Kulik, Peyton Krebs, with Tyson Kozak as your fifth, and Tage Thompson with the ability to move to the middle. So you're set there as long as Norris is healthy. That's the big question up front. You've got Lafferty and Malenstein back. Quinn's playing his way. There's still more hockey to play here, but I think what we're seeing from Quinn is what they needed to see the entire season. And now with some of the injury attached to it, there are some legitimate reasons for why he's played that way. Quinn Peterka's had a great year. Tuck's had a great year. You know, if you want to get a middle six two-way forward, not even this team scores plenty of goals. Like, you don't need somebody like that. If you want to get a veteran who can kill penalties and do some of the dirty work, you know, for a lack of a better phrase, that's fine. But yes, this is all about this is the summer of defensemen for the Sabres. And when you change coaches, you know, Granato to Lindy Ruff, Lindy wanted to evaluate this group. His system was going to be different. And the thought was that the structure that he would bring and the style of play and an emphasis on boxing out would help this entire group improve. It has for some, and others it's exposed that, you know, it might not be the best fit. So now you have a very long baseline or a very good idea of who's going to fit and who's not. And in my opinion, you mentioned a couple of the names there. I think Dahlin and Owen Power are the only ones who are guaranteed to be here next season.
Yeah.
I think Byram's status is up in the air because they have to decide if they want it's not because he's not a good player. It's just do you want a different skill set? Is he the pathway to getting a right-handed shot to play with Owen Power? Because, you know, Bernard Docker, there's been some nice signs, but, you know, he's only playing 13 minutes a night. He, you know, the
he looks like a third-year guy.
Yeah, exactly. And the early numbers, if you look with him and Power, it hasn't been great, but it's not a big sample size. Clifton, 1 year left in his deal. We'll see. I've liked him better recently, but there were the other 60 games that it's, you know, it was a little too up and down for Lindy Ruff's liking. So that is going to be their big mission. I know, like, goaltending, your options are pretty limited. The free agent market is barren. The trade market, you're dealing with no trade clauses and no movement clauses. And, you know, goalies, are they going to want to wave to come to Buffalo with the way this team defended this season? So, you know, to me, you're probably forced to bring back Lukanen and, you know, better defense around him, a different goalie coach, and then really target a backup goalie. With all due respect to James Reimer, because he's played well when he's been in there, you need somebody who can play more often. Now, Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen, given all the inconsistency, shouldn't be somebody playing 50 games, Mike. You can't trust him to do that now.
No, but that's the way Lindy Ruff. That's the way Lindy Ruff runs his goalies.
I understand. Yeah,
the hard way. He learned the hard way. That's probably too many for Luukkonen. The better approach is a 45 to 48 games. Can you trust James Reimer to play 35 games at age 38 next year? Probably not. He didn't start out real well this season. Lindy wasn't real happy. How much of that was the ping-ponging back and forth to Anaheim on waivers? That may have impacted him some, but boy, he's been terrific lately. But how much of that is just a heater? He's been great. But how much of that is just a heater that you can't sustain? Yeah, they got some decisions in that area to make. And it's not Levi either. You're not going to run back Luukkonen and Levi to start next season. I just don't see that happening. So they, you know, who knows? Maybe they do make a trade. Maybe they get another veteran in here and go Mr. Unknown Veteran Levi. I don't know what they do, but, you know, don't run back Luukkonen and Levi and think you're fixing anything.
Yeah, clearly management and the coaching staff have lost patience with Luukkonen throughout this season. You know, they kept running him out there hoping for better results. And, yeah, some of it is the team defense, but we just haven't seen those momentum-changing saves or – he's not bailing out teammates like we saw last year, right? Like, you look at Reimer's game in Ottawa was a perfect example. You know, you didn't have – he wasn't facing odd man rush after odd man rush or multiple breakaways, but he made some really challenging saves that kept out the Sabres either in the lead or, you know, just buying them time to kind of get their legs under them. It's such an important part of the game. And that's a good segue to our next topic, Owen Power. You wrote – I believe he was your Inside the NHL lead recently, and – it's fascinating because his situation reminds me so much of Dahlin's over the last, the Dahlin's first 3 to 4 years in the league where they're under a microscope and every mistake they make is going to be pointed out on social media. It's going to be a video that is shared and people are losing patience. They want Owen Power to be a different type of player than he is at the moment. And it's all about that big question. How long do you wait? And I think that I saw was Chris Pronger responding to you and his take that you just need that is the point that I think is very Chris Pronger's point, which was a very good one, is you need the right veteran D partner with Owen Power, which is something Power has not had. I think, you know, there's so many things you can criticize Adams for over the last couple of years. That is the one miss. I think that the one glaring miss that he has made is the failure to get the proper right-handed defenseman to play with Owen Power. And it's something he had talked about for years. They went and got Byram, but still they do not have the right veteran to really work with Power and be that, you know, either the confidence booster or somebody who can just, you know, take the pressure off or give him advice. Like, Owen Power's a sponge. He wants to learn, but there's nobody else in that room really to learn from other than Dahlin. And he's only 24.
Right. And I think the mistake they made was they got a little bit sidetracked and a little bit hoodwinked into thinking, well, Owen Power's a number one overall pick. He can, you know, carry his pair. No, he shouldn't be carrying his pair, even if he's a number one overall pick. He needs a veteran with him. He needs a veteran in his ear all the time. Look at the impact Jason Zucker, and it's a lower level comparison, but the impact Jason Zucker has had on Jiří Kulik this year. He's in Jiří Kulik's ear all the time, in the dressing room, on the bench. Owen Power needed somebody in his ear, and he's kind of been drifting alone out there. And Dahlin had some of the same issue early on. And we think back to year 3 and 4 of Dahlin, where Don Granato was defending Dahlin to the hilt, where the Wolves are starting to howl. I remember that terrible night against Seattle in KeyBank Center where he gave up that shorthanded goal to Brandon Tanev. And you did say to yourself, is Darlene ever going to advance out of this segment of his career? Mistake after mistake. Well, you're saying that now, but Owen Power. Now, Owen Power is a little different. His offensive stats have been very consistent. They've been very good. He's a big guy. People want him to drive guys through the boards. And like you said, that's not the way he's going to play. What he needs to do, what changes Owen Power's career path, is if he just learns how to play defense in front of his net. And that doesn't mean driving guys through the boards. That means stick position, body position, puck awareness, understanding where plays are coming from. He needs to be more cerebral on the ice and understand where plays are coming so he's not standing there doing one of these looking around and the puck's already in his net, which he does way too much of. That can be film study. That can be body position in training camp. And that's a veteran just teaching him the nuances of the game to go with his enormous skill. And that really was what Chris Pronger was talking a lot about to me, was just body position and awareness and veterans helping him. Who's helping Owen Power right now? Another example of coaching. They need some assistant coaches in here to really drill guys down. Shelf life seems to have expired with Marty Wilford, who runs the PK in the defense, even though the players love him and ask for him to return. Shelf life seems to have expired with Mike Bales, the goalie coach. I do think different viewpoints and different outlooks from coaches are going to help this club in concert with Lindy Ruff.
Yeah, just somebody to look through it at a different lens. It reminds me of when Quinn Hughes was getting started in Vancouver. They had Chris Tanev with them. Chris Tanev's skill set is just it is a perfect complement in so many ways to Quinn Hughes, where it plays a heavy game, blocks shots, and really helped Quinn Hughes understand the importance of all those details that you mentioned. And it's just all about, you know, when you're putting your young defenseman on almost an island in a lot of ways and changing his D partner once every two games, making him play his offhand side, it's going to impact their development in some way, shape, or form. And it has with Owen Power. To his credit, I still think he's getting better. Like, I understand that it's easy to poke holes, but you're seeing him be more physical in terms of winning battles around, like, behind the net, along the wall. His wall play's gotten a lot better than it was earlier in his career. But yeah, you need to see more progress, especially with given the amount of minutes he's played, Mike. And it was really noticeable Saturday in Philadelphia when Darlene was out. When Darlene's out of the lineup, they don't have that guy who's able to step in and be the number one. And you would want it to be Owen Power. He's making $8 million. You drafted him first overall, and that's where they need to get him too. So if Darlene is out of the line, because injuries happen, it's that kind of sport. Darlene plays a heavy game. You're not going to have him in the lineup 82 games every season. It's just a matter of fact. You would like to, but things happen. So you need somebody else in that lineup. Owen Power would be the perfect person, obviously, to be able to play 25 minutes and to be able to be on the ice against the opponent's top players, to quarterback your top power play and be able to run it with the same precision or at least almost as much precision as Darlene. And he's still not there yet.
And you look at Darlene being out, I think it's 10 games now. Darlene's been out this year. How many games have they won of those 10 with Darlene out? Zero. Yeah. Zippo. Another stat. You could break down this stat in, you know, micro numbers this season, all over the place, these stats that tell your story. And another stat that tells the story of the year is no wins with Darlene out of the lineup. It's just amazing. They were awful in that Philadelphia game. And one of the reasons they were awful is they'd have Darlene out there to calm things down.
And you saw defensemen trying to be Darlene's, like, but Byram was trying to do too much with some of the decisions he was making. Power was trying to do too much with some of and that's going to lead, I think, into how they're going to approach that position group this summer. It needs to be balanced out. The pieces just don't fit together right now. And you've got two really good building blocks. You know, obviously Darlene, and in my opinion, I think Power is still a very high upside player. It's just all about making sure that you have the rest of the group fits together and you have both of them with partners that actually make sense. Under our last topic, Mike, the wild card race in the Eastern Conference is hilarious at this point. Like, the Senators have a nice little lead. You know, they're, as we speak now, which of course is Wednesday afternoon, Ottawa's got 84 points. The Canadians are in the second spot. They have 79, but the Senators aren't playing very, very well right now. Brady Tkachuk's hurt. You know, it's kind of a tedious situation right now. I believe they're 3-4-1 in their last eight. So Columbus, 77 points. The Rangers have 77, Detroit 75. And I'm I'm thankful for all of us. We probably won't have to see the New York Islanders in the playoffs. They're at 74 points. Nobody should be subjected to a playoff series featuring that team. No. What do you make of this? It's funny because you look at these teams. I want to see Columbus in one of those two spots, but it's like nobody wants it or nobody's playing consistent enough to really take hold of this right now.
The team playing the best in the wild card race is not in the wild card race. It's the Buffalo Sabres.
Yeah.
They're the best one out of all these teams right now. Montreal, I've been down on all year. I don't believe in them. And you have no choice but to believe in them now for two reasons. They came back Tuesday night against the Panthers. Nick Suzuki scored 9 seconds left in regulation, then scored 29 seconds into overtime. The Montreal Canadiens are 4-0 against the Sabres this year, and we know that. They're also 4-0 against the Florida Panthers. And I looked Wednesday morning and was just shocked to see what I found. You know, the Montreal Canadiens are 16-6 inside the Atlantic Division.
Pretty good division.
They have the best record in the division against everybody, which means they're also 19-24-9 against every other division in the NHL. So they're living basically off that 8-0 against the Panthers and Buffalo, getting them in the playoffs here. Right now, they're still the favorite to get in. Suzuki's really hot. I'd love to see Columbus. Here's the other stat, Lance, just so people are aware. The New York Rangers do not need to pass people. The New York Rangers just need to be even. They've got 7 more regulation wins than Montreal, 8 more than Columbus, 6 more than Detroit. If the New York Rangers finish in a tie for that second wild card with anybody, they're getting in. They're the team that's going to get in. So they have a little bit of an advantage here. They just need to play to be even for that second spot, and they will get in. And, you know, they have the most talent. They probably should be the team that gets in, and they've woefully underachieved all year.
Detroit is the one that surprised me. I mean, they blew out the Sabres on March 12th, a couple weeks back. I thought that they would get it together, but, of course, their schedule is, what, the hardest remaining in the NHL. So, and they've struggled. I mean, Peter Mrazek was playing well. He got hurt. He's coming back now. We'll see how that goes. You know, it's interesting because that's a group with the way that it was built this year. They were supposed to win. They brought in some older players to sort of bridge the gap for some of their prospects that are coming up, and they just haven't gotten it done. Their power play isn't good enough to compensate for how bad their 5-on-5 game is. And that reminds me of Tampa last year, but Tampa had the goaltending and they had some of the star power to still get into the playoffs and, you know, at least have an opportunity.
Detroit and Columbus have both confused me. It seems like both of them had such build up to the outdoor game, and it was a tremendous event for the NHL, a tremendously emotional event in Columbus because of Johnny Gaudreau's passing. They had 94,000 people there. It seems like neither team has done anything since that game. That was almost the culmination of their seasons, and after that, it was just they exhaled. And neither had anything left after that game, after all the buildup for it. It's been very strange how both teams have struggled since then. And, you know, I think a lot of people around hockey are rooting for the Columbus Blue Jackets, but I just don't see it right now. I think clearly Montreal and the Rangers are a step ahead of them, and we'll have to see who emerges. But you're talking 8 right now, 8 games left for Montreal and the Rangers, 9 for Columbus, you know, 8 for Detroit. I do think the Islanders are out. Pittsburgh's making a late run. They're not going to make it. You know, the funny part is, had Nick Suzuki not pulled his miracle off against the Panthers, the Buffalo Sabres would have been 7 points out of the playoffs when they were about 18 out maybe 2 weeks ago. I think the biggest deficit was 18 points here at the start of March. They would have been 7 points out with 8 games left. And no miracles here, but it's just interesting. It just shows you all the little problems the Sabres had during the year, all the blown points. The Sabres could easily be in a real good position right now, and it's really their own fault.
Yep, the Canadians, among that group of teams, Mike, in my opinion, the Canadians are probably the most well-set long-term, because you look at this, they weren't supposed to be any good this year. They're a lot of, like, David Reinbacher, the defenseman they picked high a couple years ago, he isn't even arrived yet. Their decor, other than Leighton Hudson, it's not very good. It's very surprising to me, of course, that they are where they are, but a big piece of it is Nick Suzuki, Cole Caulfield, and Leighton Hudson, you know, a rookie has come up and it's given them a chance. Their goaltending is just good enough, and their defensive system, the patience with Marty St. Louis, and to allow him to really teach that team how to defend is paying off. They figured it out. But before we wrap up, when you look at these teams, Mike, and if you're sitting in the Sabres chair and you're thinking about how that you're going to stack up against this group next season, to me, you would have to feel pretty good because, okay, Ottawa, I still think their decor is also a problem, and they've got some aging vets, you know, Giroux, Perron. How much are you going to be able to rely on them? I'm skeptical that they're going to be a consistent playoff team in the years to come. Columbus, we'll still see. I like them, but, you know, they have a couple of older players. They're goaltending. I don't know. The Rangers, to me, are a mess on the outside. Laviolette, I don't know how he's kept his job through all of this. If they missed the playoffs, he's probably gone. And there's going to be more changes to their roster. They sold at the deadline, so we'll see. They're going to have to probably make some big changes this summer. Detroit, old still, and they've got some prospects that are still going to are a couple of years away. I think their goalies next year are going to be, what, Alex Lyon and Peter Mrazek? No, thank you. The Islanders, not very good. The Penguins below them, not very good. And the Bruins are heading toward a serious rebuild unless they get the first overall pick and get lucky. So, again, speaks to the urgency, but this field, it just goes to show you, like, you just got to avoid those long losing streaks. And a lot of these stats that you mentioned and that you're going to be writing about, we've been writing about for weeks, that if they just fix a couple of areas of their game, road record, division record, the gap isn't that vast as it may seem.
You know what it
shows
you? It's pretty obvious. What it shows you to me is the Buffalo Sabres should have been in the playoffs this year. They're going to try to fix it for next year. They're better than most of these teams. They should have been in the playoffs this year. They can frame it any way they want. This is more of a lost opportunity than 22-23, because that was still a young, growing team that they even surprised themselves. This team should have been in the playoffs this year with this coach.
Yep. Couldn't agree with you more when you look at the seasons that, like, I mean, in 22-23, they got 12 goals from J.J. Paterka.
Right.
You know, it's just they got a big year from Jeff Skinner, and that was the swap. So you're right. That's... You can't lose 13 games in a row, as Dennis Gilbert reminded me when I spoke to him in Ottawa. That's what it comes down to, and you know that we're going to be hearing that at Locker Cleanout Day in a few weeks. But still some games to go. The Sabres have a couple at home this weekend, only three more on the road. And then we'll see what happens. He's Mike Harrington. I'm Lance Lysowski. Thank you for tuning in. Of course, as always, we are the only outlet that travels everywhere the Buffalo Sabres do. So if you don't already, hopefully that you do, make sure to subscribe. Follow along our coverage. We make it worth your while. Thank you for tuning in, and we will catch you guys next time. Take care.
Express Windows is a best of 716 favorite for window and door installation. They also offer discounts for military personnel and seniors. Learn more at expresswindowsinc.com. Express Windows. Fast, easy, affordable.